Support for WMNF. Comes from our members in Ruth Eckert Hall, presenting Woody Allen and New Orleans Jazz. Best known as an actor, film writer, and director, Woody Allen and his band perform a mix of popular tunes, hymns, spirituals, marches, blues, and rags Wednesday, December 21st at 8 p.m. More at RuthEckertHall.com. I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to bring you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll discuss chimps, namely chimps now living a much improved life at Save the Chimps, a sanctuary in Fort Pierce, Florida, with sanctuary veterinarian Dr. Jocelyn Besner, a last-minute substitute for originally booked guest sanctuary director Jen Feuerstein. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Jeff Beck with his version of Tiger Rag here on Talking Animals. Paul, or at least honoring him, with his version of Tiger Rag, an animal song to ease us in today's edition of Talking Animals. My name is Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Dr. Jocelyn Besner, the veterinarian at Save the Chimps, filling in sort of last minute for our originally scheduled guest, Jen Feuerstein, the sanctuary director there. And Save the Chimps is based in Fort Pierce, Florida, and is the world's largest sanctuary for rescued chimps. Today's discussion is time to spotlight some significant milestones achieved at the sanctuary in 2011, including a notable development this very week. We'll discuss some of the milestones, certainly one pertinent this week. And it's, I guess, been rife with challenges, which I think accounts for the switch in the guests at the last second. I think Jen Feuerstein's on the road with chimps now. But anyways, we will speak with Dr. Jocelyn Besner in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the Comedy Corner, involves animal comedy. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Susan Tedeschi and Derek Trucks at Ruth Eckert Hall on December 29th. And we'll have a brief chat with Sharon Roberts of All About Paws Rescue, hearing about a pit bull named Jenny, who has a very rough story, could use some help. And maybe in the holiday spirit, someone listening will be moved to offer that help. Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcements segment, a look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon, produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item, well, a couple of people that have connections one way or the other to the show. First of all, Vegan Black Metal Chef, our beloved Vegan Black Metal Chef, has a couple cool things going on at the moment. First of all, his new clip, latest instructional video, can be his holiday hell roast, by the way, can be found at Vegan Black Metal Chef YouTube channel. Great as always, hilarious and wonderful as always. But also, kind of a cool thing for our friend is that part of that very piece, Holiday Hell Roast, was included in Anthony Bourdain's show No Reservations on the Travel Channel. There, it was sort of a holiday special, and it was sort of this would-be travelogue in a way for Anthony Bourdain going around to see how to celebrate the holidays. And at one point, he's in this hotel room and watching TV, and who comes on? That's right, Vegan Black Metal Chef. So very, very cool. Congrats to him. Also, congrats to our friend Loris Vidal, more closely identified with the music show we used to host here, Wednesday Sonic Detour, but performed at the second Talking Animals Festival. Wonderful artist, great guy, and now engaged to a great woman, Donna. So congrats to them. On to actual animal news more directly. This came from the Time Magazine blog. Says they're back. Whale hunting season kicked off in Japan last week as three ships set off a security vessel on their annual pilgrimage to cull hundreds of minke and fin whales in Antarctic waters. And so begins the annual showdown between the whalers and the sea shepherd. Say that one time slow. Conservation Society, the tenacious, publicity-savvy anti-whaling group that chases the Japanese fleet around the frigid waters of the sixth continent each winter. The yearly spectacle features scuba-clad activists zipping around in fast boats, lobbing stink bombs at the whaling ships, and generally making life miserable for the crew who keep Japan's 19th century dream alive. The annual tussle even has its own reality show. Whaling is not an easy practice to defend these days, particularly when recent polls have shown that 95% of Japanese eat whale meat rarely, if at all. The state-backed industry, which Japan considers its sovereign right to pursue as part of its centuries-old tradition, is under attack both by environmental groups at home and abroad. And yet the government did not do its beleaguered case any favors when it confirmed last week that $29 million of the National Post-Tsunami Recovery Fund had been allotted to the whaling industry, including to provide extra security for the whaling fleet. Ongoing story we've been sort of bringing you and talking about on the show for several months deals with the Toronto Zoo and they're closing down their elephant exhibit and then the tussle of what to do with those elephants. So here's kind of the latest from the Toronto Star. Stalling tactics by the Toronto Zoo and its keepers over sending three elephants to a California sanctuary threaten their health, according to city councilors closely involved with their fate. Councilor Glenn the Bayermeister calls it sabotage that ultimately could thwart the transfer of Aringa, Toka, and Thika to the Performing Animal Welfare Sanctuary, PAWS, in San Andreas, California. It's a guerrilla campaign against council and the people of Toronto by a rogue staff, he said. As a zoo board member, I've been immensely frustrated over unwillingness by the Toronto Zoo to put the elephants first before political warfare and personal agendas. We're in another winter, but we could have had them outright before Christmas, said Councillor Michelle Berendetti, who spearheaded Council's October 25th motion approving the sanctuary and instructing zoo staff to work with PAWS. Quote, I don't want another death on our hands, said Berendetti. If an elephant dies this winter, it'll be on our heads, it'll be on their heads, not on ours. Since 1984... seven elephants have died at the zoo, four within the past 4 years. The oldest was 41. Zoo Chief Executive John Tracogna did not return repeated phone calls from the Star over several days last week. CUPE Local 1600 President Grant Ankeman, whose union represents 192 Toronto Zoo staffers, says the elephant keepers have been, quote, totally professional. But after council's vote on PAWS, elephant keepers and other zoo staffers ramped up their opposition to council's decision with a Facebook campaign. One posting on a public page called the Toronto Zoo Elephant Keepers compared Farinetti to a brainless puppet. Another called Paz co-founder Ed Stewart, quote, an evil lying man. One zoo staffer wrote on her own Facebook page that counselors had no effing clue. Goes on from there. So, we'll keep track of that one. Hopefully those elephants will get out to Paz soon. More locally, Santa has a favorite place to visit Tampa Bay's pets, the Humane Society of Tampa Bay's gazebo. You can bring your pets and get the perfect picture with old St. Nick in our festively decorated gazebo this Saturday, December 17th. And again, that's at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, 3607 North Armenia Avenue. More information at their website, humanesocietytampa.org. And latest dispatch from Dr. Michael Greger, who we've had on the show and, of course, does the daily video, nutrition-related video from all the research that he calls from all over the world, really, and that you can find every day, again, on nutritionfacts.org. But he's got this to say. I'm excited to announce that yet another new volume of my latest in nutrition DVD series is now available for pre-order and will ship out December 19th, just in time to cement those New Year's resolutions. As always, all the proceeds I receive from the sale of all my DVDs go to charity. Normally, I come out with just one volume a year, but to fulfill my promise of uploading a new video every day, year-round, to nutritionfacts.org, I've had to step it up. As usual, I've scoured the world's scholarly literature on clinical nutrition for the most interesting, practical, and groundbreaking science published over the last 12 months on how best to feed ourselves and our families to prevent, treat, and even reverse chronic disease. So, there's a chapter listing for Volume 7. There's probably 52 video pieces, but randomly they include abdominal aortic aneurysms, ticking time balloons. Another one is Say No to Drugs by Saying Yes to Plants. Yet another is Best Berries. And they're just kind of sampling anti-inflammatory and antitoxinants. And Heart Shouldn't Skip a Beat, of course spelled B-E-E-T, and so on. So again, to order those, you can go to drgreger.org/DVDs, and to, as always, watch these pieces that are uploaded every day, go to nutritionfacts.org. From Riverside, California, comes this tale. It was a scene straight out of a Hollywood comedy. A feisty badger darted in and out of front lawns as an animal control officer chased behind. This badger, though, had met his match, Riverside County Animal Services Officer James Huffman. Got a badger Monday in Desert Hot Springs in a residential neighborhood on Appalachian Street. The weasel had been taunting dogs and their owners. Quote, they can be quite aggressive, but he's probably lucky he didn't run into a bigger dog, Huffman said. Huffman chased a lively badger through the neighborhood, nearly losing it several times before capturing it about noon. Huffman took the badger, which are rarely caught in Riverside County, to a wildlife area near Mission Creek Road near the White Water Preserve. The animal should be able to find an adequate food and water there, away from the dogs. And lastly here, I think for the moment at least, again more locally, the Audubon Christmas Bird Count is scheduled for Friday, December 23rd. No experience necessary. You can call 727-772-7584 to see how you can help in this yearly nationwide bird census and be part of an over 100-year-old tradition. You just need to know how to count. You don't have to be an expert birder otherwise. So, again, you can call 727-772-7584. And you can probably get information otherwise at clearwateraudubon.com. All right. Let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Roman Danulo with a piece called Animals on today's Comedy Corner. We're talking animals.
All the time, though. It's nice to be here. I'm living out in B.C., though. I live out in supernatural British Columbia. Yeah. Well, I was pooped on by a bird the other day. Yeah, man, and it was the second time 1 month. So I said, that is it, man, I'm getting these birds back. Let me tell you, you gotta stand outside for a long time with your pants down like this before a bird comes randomly flying through. I did, I waited it out, right? Took about 2 days, finally a sparrow comes whipping through, boom, I nailed him, right? Flipped him on the wing, he spun off and hit the curb, I was like, yeah, wash that off, my friend. It's very satisfying indeed. So because of that, I've decided to get all the animals back for the things they're doing to us. Oh, yeah, man, I'm out there. I'm humping dogs' legs, huh? I'm ignoring cats, sure. I'm sucking the blood out of mosquitoes. You're going to be itchy in the morning, my friend. I'm baffling the Sasquatch with a blurry photo of myself. I'm selling whale CDs of me making annoying noises and passing it off as music. I've got a pet now. I've never had a pet before. I got a cat, and I was very concerned because I got a lot of germ issues. My friends tell me, don't worry, Roman. Cats are very fussy when it comes to hygiene. Right? But my cat likes to lick its own ass and drink out of the toilet. If you ask me, they're not fussy enough. I'd say that's rather carefree when it comes to hygiene. Wouldn't you say? Cats are more like risk takers. If I sat around licking my ass all day, you wouldn't call me fussy. In fact, you wouldn't call me at all. And it'd be fine because I'd be licking my own ass. What do I want to talk to you for? Besides, how do you hold the phone? Do you know what I'm saying?
All right, that was Roman Daniel with a piece called Animals, taken from a Canadian stand-up special. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. And I think as part of some of the challenges facing the Save the Chimps folks and the last-minute swap with Jen Fierstein being filled in for by Dr. Jocelyn Besner, still trying to reach Dr. Besner, so we're going to hear this jaunty animal tune from Bellaflex, Snakes Alive. We'll be right back, hopefully, with Dr. Besner from Save the Chimps. It's Talking Animals. Love you and up. All right. We've managed to track down Dr. Besner. So it is nearly time to, past time really, to speak with her. And again, she's the veterinarian at Save the Chimps, located in Fort Pierce, Florida, and the world's largest sanctuary for rescued chimps. And again, the sanctuary has reached some significant milestones in 2011, including a notable one this very week, which has obviously been rife with challenges, which accounts for Dr. Besner stepping in for our originally scheduled guest, Jen Fierstein. So, anyways, we, of course, invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. So let's welcome Dr. Jocelyn Besner to Talking Animals. Good morning, Dr. Besner.
Hi, Duncan. How are you today?
I'm all right. How about you?
We're great today out here at Save the Chimps. It's wonderful.
Good, good, good. Well, my last discussion like this about Save the Chimps was with Dr. Noon, the late founder, of course, of the sanctuary. So, you know, I'm sure her spirit hangs over what's been going on this year and especially this week. So let's and I assume you worked with Dr. Noon for a number of years?
I did. I worked with her for 8 great years. She was definitely one of those go-get-em kind of people, if you ever interviewed her, which you, sounds like you did.
Yeah, I absolutely did.
Unique and brilliant person she was. And I think even this week, with the end of the Colston era and all bringing all the chimps down to Florida, I think even she would take pause right, you know, today.
I'm sure. Well, let's sort of jump right into that. I mean, again, I kind of alluded to that there's been a number of significant milestones at Save the Chimps this year. And again, this week does feel particularly momentous, if a bit complicated, it sounds like. So, you know, before we give away sort of the end of this movie, as it were, let's talk about the maybe some of the earlier scenes and plot points of the saga that we could call the Great Chimp Migration. Tell us a little bit about Colston and sort of the whole history and how that hooks into, of course, Save the Chimps there.
Yeah, Save the Chimps actually began in 2001 when Dr. Noon took possession of Air Force chimps. What happened in the 1950s is the Air Force began breeding chimps for the space program. We had this terrific drive to get up into space before the Russians. And so babies were brought over from Africa. Their mothers were shot. The babies were brought over, and they began breeding and training these chimps to go up into space. And two of them actually went, Ham and Enos. The Air Force continued to breed them. They got up to about 160 chimps. And what happened was the Air Force decided they no longer needed to be in the chimp business, and they decided to put them all into research. Well, Dr. Noon and a bunch of other animal rights organizations got wind of that, and she felt that they had served their country well and that they deserved to go into retirement. So she sued the Air Force, which is a pretty confident thing to do.
Right, that's bravado and then some, right? Yeah.
Really, take on the Air Force. I think she was joking, but she said, and I want them to fly them to the retirement center, but they obviously didn't go for that. But anyway, she got possession of 21 of the Air Force chimps, and she started to Save the Chimps in Fort Pierce, Florida. She got 150 acres sort of out there in the orange fields, and she built a state-of-the-art couple buildings. And what's unique about Save the Chimps is that what she wanted them to do was get out of cages. She wanted them to see the sky and touch the grass and not have to sit in these cement metal cages anymore. So we actually have a facility with a land bridge, and it goes out to three-acre islands where the chimps go out and choose to be where they want to sleep, where they want to eat, where they want to play.
So
that's how Save the Chimps began.
Absolutely. So really, once they've landed at Save the Chimps, then within reason at least, all the choices of how they want to spend their days and live their life are up to them.
And that was her thing. She said, all I want to do is give them a choice. Let them choose for once what they get to eat. Should we give them a variety of foods? Where they get to spend their evenings, who they get to play with, who they want to groom. It really is amazing because I started, well, going back a little bit, after she got the 21 chimps, the lab where she got the chimps went bankrupt due to animal welfare violations. And then suddenly Save the Chimps went from 21 chimps to almost 300 chimps overnight. She bought the facility from the Colston Foundation, which was the bankrupt research laboratory, and along with buying that property, the 266 chimps and the 61 monkeys were suddenly donated. So overnight, she had this 300-plus primates that she had to take care of literally on her own. It was truly an amazing phenomena.
And
so we've grown from... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so I think it's really interesting just because it's not only expensive, as people may or may not imagine, but it's more intricate than maybe a lot of people would imagine. Maybe, Dr. Benjamin, you could sort of describe the game plan that happens each time chimps have been relocated from New Mexico to Fort Pierce.
Yeah, well, what happens is, you know, these chimps were basically kept in isolation, as most chimps in research are. When they're on a research project, they are taken away from their families and their friends, and they're kept in 5 by 7 by 7 foot cages. That's the legal limit for these research chimps. So she had to do several things. She had to rehabilitate them. She had to re-socialize them, which is what her specialty was. Then after she built these families, and you do that by introducing them one-on-one, so it takes 3 to 5 months to build a family of 20. Then she had to get them from Colston in New Mexico, Alamogordo, New Mexico, down to Florida. Once they come to Florida on our trailer, our custom-built trailer, where they each have a window, and they're in these very secure boxes with a window and a caregiver that takes care of them for that 36, 37-hour drive, which we drive straight through.
Mm-hmm.
Then, for instance, today, our last 10 chimps are arriving at this moment. Then they get taken off the trailer. They're exhausted, but they're very excited. They get put into these special buildings, which have 6 individual rooms. They get reunited with their family, which is a wonderful, vocal, hugging, emotional thing for the chimps, because they're like, oh, we haven't seen you for a month. Here you are. And then they settle down for the night. And then tomorrow is the big day. Tomorrow's the day that we open that door that Dr. Noon envisioned, and we let them see the outside for the first time. And some of them go right out. And some of them wait and sort of pause and sit on the cement right outside the door and say, I'm going to contemplate this a little bit. So it's very, very exciting.
Absolutely. Well, so take that a step further, if we could, Dr. Besner. I mean, paint us a little bit of a picture of once, whether they do it immediately or some of the more hesitant ones wait a little while. What happens when a chimp who's previously only known, you know, cages, bars, cement, really only been inside, first experiences fresh air and the feel of grass on his or her feet?
Well, you know, when the doors open, you know, our groups are anywhere from 15 to 27, I think is our biggest. And when the doors first open, we let them out in small groups at a time. And some of them head right out. They jump out the door, they go off the property, and they start strutting across the grass. And I find that a lot of those chimps were actually the older ones that were born in Africa. Then you get some that you are convinced, knowing them in New Mexico, and I've known them for 8 years, so I know a lot, all their personalities.
Sure.
You think, oh, she's going to go right out. She's really, really brave, and she's great with intros, and she's just confident. Yet she will hop out, take a look around, hop back. A lot of them will only hold on to the caging or the metal that we have, and they'll tiptoe out, but always holding on to the cages, because that's what they've known for 20, 30 years. Imagine sitting in a cement and metal cage for 30 years and then suddenly having the door opened.
Yeah.
Saying, here you go. Here's your big, big wide world. It's pretty amazing. So they're all different.
Sure, sure.
One of the things that is the best about it is they're together. They're doing this as a family group. There's a lot of emotion. Some of them come to get reassurance from the people, but a lot of them reassure each other. We have some that go out, they check it all out, they come back, and they get their friend, and they grab their friend, and they sort of walk them out. And that's really an amazing thing to watch.
No, it must be so so powerful, even though obviously by this time you've seen it, you know, many, many, many times played out. But so
It never gets old.
I'm sure. No, it must be just a powerful moment, really, every time that door is thrown open that first time. And so how, like, one of the reasons, again, we're sort of talking this week is this group that's sort of in route and on its final, miles to get to Fort Pierce, does really, sort of mark the culmination of this multi-year sort of complex effort, the Great Chimp Migration. But at what point, especially maybe earlier on when there was obviously a much larger pool of chimps to relocate in these kind of small groupings, how were those groupings determined initially? I mean, what sort of premium was placed on chimps who maybe appear to be most desperately need to be sprung, as it were, like, just traumatized by, what they had, been part of as far as the research? Or was that, how were those groups assembled, again, early on when there was just so many chimps to sort of bring over?
Well, that's a good point. There were so many chimps, and we wanted to get them all here as fast as possible, obviously, but it takes time and it takes effort, and a lot of them were resilient through their research, and they handled life well when we started making their lives better, giving them fresh fruit, introducing them to other chimps, letting them be chimps again. And there were some that had medical issues and emotional issues, and Dr. Noon obviously wanted those chimps brought to Florida sooner.
Sure.
And she actually had a custom-built smaller truck made for one of our chimps named Ron, who's recently passed away. But
yeah.
Ron had a severe heart disease and couldn't stand small cages. So she had a custom-built cage in a smaller truck built for him with a hammock and his best friend Photo, and I traveled in the back with these chimps to make sure they got there as soon as possible. And great news for us is Ron ended up staying in Florida for another 6 years, a healthy, happy, out-on-the-island chimp. So a lot of it was, and you'll know when you read our website, you'll see that most of the chimps that are coming today are younger.
Right.
And part of that is we wanted to get the older, the elderly, the sick, the emotionally traumatized, because you give them a little more space and you give them some dignity, and a lot of their emotional issues do go away. And they're such social animals. All they need is a friend. They just need another person to care about them, to bring them out of their trauma.
Sure. And I should note that the website you allude to, and it's a really terrific, very sort of rich and detailed and just wonderful website, is SaveTheChimps.org. So let's talk a little bit more about this group that's sort of in the home stretch today, just because, again, it does represent the very last group of better part of, 300 chimps that have been relocated. And yet I also gather from, sort of the last-minute switch, we were originally going to speak with Jen,
yeah,
that it's been sort of a very, maybe extra complicated journey. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about kind of the challenges that this week have brought in that way.
Well, yeah, we have this wonderful trailer, custom trailer, and it needed, we have a truck with it, and our truck, right as we were about to start preparing for it, had some mechanical difficulties. And so in the last moment, everyone pulled together, and Brian, our manager of the kitchen, and Jen, Firestein, and everybody involved, Triana, had to find another truck because we didn't want to stop the migration. And so with a terrific amount of effort, everybody located another truck, got it driven from Austin to Alamogordo so that our migration was delayed only about 4 hours. On top of which, we had to say goodbye to wonderful caregivers who took care of these chimps for 8 years. So that was difficult.
Sure.
We offered a lot of them a chance to come down here, and some of them did to pursue that and stayed with the chimps, but a lot of them had family there, so they stayed. And these chimps were all research chimps. A lot of them came from the NIH and the CDC.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're teenagers. A lot of them are the boys, and they're teenagers, and they were a little bit nervous about everything going on. Some of them, the way we move them is they're in these individual cages at Colston. We separate them all.
Yeah.
And we put the transfer boxes up to the cage, and we ask them, do you want to get in the box? And some of them jump right in, which I knew. Sarah is this wonderful, confident 22-year-old chimp, and she just is full of excitement and loves new things. And she jumped right in.
Mm-hmm.
Taz jumped right in. Tori and we sort of snuck up and shut the door, and these guys were ready to rock and roll. they sat and waited for their fellows to come. And then others we have to sedate because they just are too scared.
Wow.
Anyway, so it's a full day of that.
Yeah.
Once we get them all in the cages and healthy and sitting up and eating, then we start to load the truck. And that requires a lot of manpower. chimps are not what you see in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Our chimpanzees are after they've been, you know, rejected from Hollywood because they're too big and massive. A lot of people come on our property and say, wow, I had no idea. They're big. They're seven times the strength of human men. And they're dangerous. They're wild animals.
Sure.
We treat them with that kind of respect. But anyway, then we get them into the truck, and there's dead silence. All of them are just so fascinated. Imagine this intelligent animal that's been stuck in a cage for 30 years and then suddenly gets out of the cage, rolled outside into a trailer, and is, on the road watching the world go by. They're absolutely fascinated. A lot of them don't even sleep. They're so fascinated by the lights and the cars and everything going by. It's a wonderful trip to make. It's a long, hard journey because we rotate drivers and we don't want the chimps to have to stay anywhere. We want to go straight through.
Sure.
But in the same token, even though it's hard on the people, it's great for the chimps.
Well, not to mention they all have window seats. So again, it's quite a ride. So
the only time you hear anything is when they stop for gas. All the chimps are banging and saying, let's get going again.
Right. We enjoyed when we were moving along here on the road. So Dr. Besner, I guess I'd be curious because when these groupings have sort of been assembled, and you mentioned families of 20, I guess I was under the impression it was typically a group of 10. But however many it is, how often do those groups that are put together and sort of really formed in New Mexico, how many of those groupings hold, once they've arrived in Florida and had some time? I mean, do they all pretty much stay together, or do some chimps, for one reason or another, kind of get moved around to other groups? Or how does that play out over time?
Well, Dr. Noon and then Jen Firestein, our director, are extremely good at reading body language.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that hard work of who will go with who and who enjoys who is done in New Mexico before they come here. So they're fairly well-established groups once
okay.
they get here. And
yeah.
even though they're very vocal and very loud, and they never go to bed angry, and they yell at each other, the fighting is mainly just disagreements. So when they get here, as long as the group leader or alpha male stays with them, then everything's fine. Occasionally an alpha male, because they'll pass away. For instance, Carlos passed away, and then no one stepped up to the plate. Nobody said, okay, I'll take over this group. And that was one of the groups that it's unusual that sometimes we do have to say, hey, this group is no longer cohesive. They're not getting along.
Mm.
We've tried everything we could. We maybe add somebody who we think would be a good leader, and they say, no, not too interested.
Mm. Oh, wow.
then we end up, and it's a bit of a difficulty because, as usual, we're a nonprofit. We have 12 islands. And we have found that we do have some chimps that cannot get along with other chimps.
Yeah.
And, no one could have predicted it, but of course, that makes sense. Not
sure.
every human can live in a kibbutz, and not every chimp can live in a big group.
Right.
So we do have this group of chimps, we call them special needs, that have emotional or medical problems that actually can't live in a big group. And that's why we are always looking for funding and trying to build that also an outdoor space that's going to be smaller. That's our next push. I said to Jen as we were putting the chimps on the trailer, I said, well, you and I think, oh, let's rest a minute. But Dr. Noon would already be on that. Okay, how are we going to get these special needs chimps their outdoor housing and get them going? So she was tireless.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Well, that's, her vision has been realized. And again, I think she would be quite pleased just to see even what's continued on after her death in 2009. But speaking of funding, Dr. Besner, again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Dr. Jocelyn Besner, veterinarian at Save the Chimps, the world's largest sanctuary for rescued chimps. And we're in our final moments, but if you do have a question or comment for Dr. Besner, you can call 813-239-9663 or email DJ at WMNF.org. So obviously there's tremendous expenses involved in operating a sanctuary like Save the Chimps. I mean, just the relocation costs of what we were talking about and what the, you know, the final one that's going on today or the next couple of days. I mean, but that's, there's been many, many of those. And, but we haven't even touched on daily food costs and, you know, veterinary care that you and others provide, et cetera. So I know a kind of a key funder, has been the Arcus, Foundation. But what else, what are the other sort of sources of funds for Save the Chimps?
Well, it's really just private donations. Arcus does give us about a third of a half of our funding, but the rest is raised by our terrific group of developers, Triana Romero and her group. Mm-hmm. And it's always an effort. It's always a challenge, especially in this economy. We just are very thankful to the people that do send us whatever they can afford for these great chimps.
Sure. So, again, if people hearing this and wanting to help out are so inclined, they can, again, go to savethechimps.org and donate directly there. But also, let's say that, you know, the money's a bit tight right now or it's the holidays. What else can people do to help? I mean, are there volunteer opportunities? And I know that in the past we've sent some toys and other things just sort of for the chimps in Richmond. Are there other ways that people could help out even if they can't necessarily reach into their pocket right this moment?
Oh, absolutely. Just spreading the word is enough, you know, just telling your friends. If you can't help us financially, just spread the good word, what we do and why it's important to do it for all the great apes in research right now. You know, just be aware of what's going on and what our tax dollars are being spent for. You know, there's still chimpanzees in research, you know, just, you know, diving into that issue and just educating yourself and educating your friends. We also have volunteer opportunities on the sanctuary. We're not open to the public because chimpanzees are shy of strangers and we feel like they've had a life of exploitation and they really need to just live their life out right now.
Sure.
That was Dr. Noon's vision as well.
Yeah.
But there's volunteer opportunities, school programs. Our development team will send brochures and information out and will help any school program that wants to further the cause, even just cleaning out your closet and old blankets. I mean, chimpanzees, they nest in their blankets and they just love them. We have one little old chimp named Mandy. I think she makes a nest every night, about 20 blankets. So,
wow.
Everything, even the little stuff is important.
Sure. Well, Dr. Besner, we're sort of in our last minute or maybe even less, but let me just, well, what is the current chimp population, what will it be when this latest part of the migration arrives?
We have 276 chimpanzees. Everybody on the staff knows them individually. They all have their own personalities, their own likes and dislikes. And I'll tell you, I've been working there 8 years, and I never get tired of visiting with the chimps. They truly are amazing.
Well, then maybe for the final question, I'll ask you perhaps a tough one then, because I'm sure you probably feel strongly about most, if not all. But is there one or two chimps that you have a particular soft spot for? And if so, why?
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody knows Soto's my guy. Soto was raised in a circus. He has a heart condition. He's an old man, little old man now, and he just laughs and plays and thinks life is great, and he should teach everybody to live in the moment. He's a wonderful guy. And the other one I love is Bobby. Bobby was a self-mutilating chimp. He self-mutilated himself for 17 years, and now he's living on the island, and he does not injure himself at all. And
wow.
They're funny and cute, and they love to play, and it's just great. Visit with him every day.
Wow. Well, another great story of recovery. Bobby, I guess, exemplifies. So, it just sounds great. And Dr. Besner, thanks so much for making the time. Kind of, I know, last minute for you to join us on Talking Animals today, but I appreciate the opportunity to kind of get updated and have our listeners find out about all the great work and the last probably hours of the great chimp migration is underway. So thanks again for joining us on Talking Animals.
Oh, thanks for having us. And please come out and visit us, Duncan.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. There'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to see Susan Tedeschi and Derek Trucks at Ruth Eckert Hall on December 29th. To the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune, I'll give you a giant clue. The singer is David Bowie, the subject of a three-night WMNF Tribute Show, January 6th at the State Theater in St. Pete, January 7th at Skipper Smokehouse in Tampa, January 8th at the Cock and Bull Pub in Sarasota. For tickets and more information, go to WMNF.org. In a moment, we'll speak with Sharon Roberts of All About Paws Rescue with quite a story about a dog named Ginny. Right now, it's Name That Animal Tune live, sort of, on Talking Animals. All right, we've got some folks calling. Let's see really quickly before we welcome Sharon on here. All right, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
Dang it, I can't.
Oh, well, yeah, that's interesting that you called in nonetheless. All right, well, thank you. All right, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
Yes, that Diamond Dogs by David Bowie.
That sure is. What is your first name, sir?
Bob,
okay, great. I'm going to come back and get your information towards the end of the show, and we'll be sending you off to see that great show with Susan Tedeschi. And yeah, so that's going to be awesome. All right, well, thanks for listening. Susan Tedeschi, Derek Trucks at Ruth Eckert Hall, December 29th. So congratulations, Bob. Stay on hold. All right. Meanwhile, now, I want to welcome Sharon Roberts to Talking Animals. Sharon, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals today. And let's maybe just first, with just a quick moment, tell us a little bit about All About Paws.
All About Paws Rescue is a rescue group that I form to help animals everywhere. I do concentrate on South Hillsborough County, the South Shore area. And we rescue, rehabilitate, and find forever homes.
Okay, cool. So with that in mind, tell us about Ginny, who we're mainly here to talk about today, and when did you sort of first meet Ginny, and maybe could sort of describe what that was like and what she was like when you first met her.
Ginny has been in our rescue now for about 6 months. She was an animal that was deserted in the Waimama area. We received the call, and when we first took Ginny in, she was 24 pounds, very ill, was heartworm positive, had many parasites, many wounds, a broken pelvis in two places, and a very bad pelvic infection. And so Ginny today is 68 pounds and is a beautiful, beautiful pit bull. She is a blue pit bull. And she has some incontinence problems because of the broken pelvis and some nerve damage, which is improving. And we've had with her some other dog aggression problems, but never ever with any humans or no food aggression. And Ginny needs badly a forever home, which would have to be a special home.
Right. So let's talk a little bit more about that in one sec, Sharon. But first, I get the sense from what at least little I know about Ginny before we're speaking now is that when she was first found, she had kind of escaped from the situation. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what people at least assume kind of was what was going on in the where she lived previously.
We're very sure, along with our veterinarian Fox and friends, Dr. Fox, that Ginny was a fighting dog. And somehow she did escape. She did basically have to drag herself, because there were marks where she did, to the home that she was found, which was an elderly lady in the Waimama area. With the wounds and the ears are cropped, and also the way the wounds were and the injuries, we are sure that Jenny was a fighting dog, which was horrible abuse. She's under 2 years old and has endured just absolutely unbelievable abuse for a dog that young.
For sure. And it sounds like, again, she was, you know, from some of the injuries, the pelvis and other stuff, I guess the vet and maybe others have surmised that she was, you know, kicked and otherwise sort of abused. And I guess she's already had a number of, for someone's dog so young, a number of litters of puppies, too, right?
Yes. Dr. Fox was fairly sure that she had probably, for a dog being 2 years old, had probably at least had three litters. The infection that she was had was due to being, you know, with puppies and not the proper nutrition. To find her at 24 pounds and now she's 68 and still putting some weight on. She was very, very malnourished and abused. And the broken pelvis, yes, usually from being kicked. Some of the other wounds, the wounds around her face and her head from fighting, and possibly some of the wounds on her back from other abuse at the hands of her abuser.
And the thing is, I mean, again, this is, you know, an awful story. And unfortunately, I see them and they're sent to me and I see them on, you know, Facebook, just, I guess, the nature number of friends I have, whatever, all day long. I guess I particularly, you know, just even though we just can't really usually do this on the show, there's not the airtime for it. But I did want to kind of spotlight Jenny a little bit, just because I feel like the spirit that she's shown, first of all, to sort of bust out of where she was and essentially crawl to freedom is notable. And just the spirit she's shown, I think, in her recovery and healing. And it just sounds like a really extraordinary dog that, you know, is going to need someone kind of extraordinary to look after for that forever home. But it sounds like from what you're saying that probably other animals wouldn't necessarily be a good fit for her, but that you and others and the vet and other experts feel like there would not be any other issues of aggression towards, you know, humans in that forever home.
Exactly. We have not seen any whatsoever, and she's been exposed to many, many humans in situations. We've not seen any aggression whatsoever with children. She loves to sit on the couch beside you, to love to play ball and you know, play with her Kong, which is one of her favorite toys. And she would just be a wonderful dog, a wonderful only dog. And there is a, you know, the handicap that she is going to have some incontinence problem. She loves being outside, and she's endured a lot. She's had to be very brave to, first of all, escape, like you said, and second of all the surgeries and the heartworm treatment and everything else that she's just showed. At no time was she aggressive toward anyone.
Yeah.
And just a lot of love.
And we should also note, I think, in terms of the incontinence that, you know, that, I guess that's already healed a little bit, but regardless, that she also, you know, does wear a diaper, so it's not really an issue, even though I think she's largely kind of needs to be an indoor dog, that the diaper is kind of addressing that pretty well. So, and again, I think, she looks very, you know, cute and nice, and, I saw a picture of her, I think, on the All About Paws Facebook page. So speaking of that, just because we're sort of at the, just about at the end of our time here, Sharon, but where could people, if they're just feel moved by the holiday spirit or for what other reason, to maybe think about giving Jenny a forever home, where could they contact you? Is there a phone number or an email, a website? What's the best way for people to follow up?
They could contact me at All About Paws. The office number is 813-634-6215. They can also through Facebook, which is All About Paws, and click on Rescue and Jenny's Story.
Mm-hmm.
And then email is also on the Facebook, but I'll briefly state it. It's allpawsjustj@yahoo.com.
All right. Well, let's hope that one or more folks are moved by Jenny's story. And again, it's the holidays. It'd be nice to have a nice present for Jenny. So thank you, Sharon, for all your great work and for helping out, obviously, Jenny in the meantime. And let's hope we end up with a happy story here.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, December 21st, with another edition of Talking Animals. I hope you'll join us then. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, archives, podcasts, past Talking Animals programs, and more, including a link to our Facebook page, Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott, the All Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next from noon at 3. Or if you want to keep listening to news and information, the Tom Hartman Show is starting up at noon on our digital channel, WNF.org/thesource. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This one from My Morning Jacket, who are typically fantastic over the weekend. Every so often on tour, they break out a version of this rare 10-year-old track. They didn't in the Florida shows, but they did last Wednesday in Texas, I believe. And we're breaking out some of it here. This is My Morning Jacket with Cobra, taking us up to the NPR News, and then Scott Elliott and his great show right here on WMNF Tampa. We'll see you next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals.